And what we're witnessing right now is the Republican Party is purging itself of everyone who's not extreme enough. What you're seeing is it's an orchestrated movement where Trump was at the center and tried to use every lever of his power. This is deeper than we know. There are more people involved. Trump is actively involved. At the end of the day, it'll be up to the people. The people in the streets, because without the people, I do not have faith in the institutions anymore. And I do not have faith in the Democratic Party that unfortunately is too weak and has the wrong type of leadership for this type of fight.
Welcome to episode 116 of the Refuse Fascism podcast, a podcast brought to you by volunteers with Refuse Fascism. I'm Sam Goldman, one of those volunteers and host of the show. Refuse Fascism exposes, analyzes, and stands against the very real danger and threat of fascism coming to power in the United States. If you are filled with fury, with fear, with deep sadness over the fact that Roe has just been overturned, I am with you completely. Our lack of shock, if you are someone regularly listening to the show, doesn't really soften the blow that the highest court in the land has essentially stripped women and girls of legal status as full human beings. These fascists have taken a giant step forward in their enforcement of a cruel and brutal vision of a Christian fascist USA, and let's be real, they are just getting started. This is accelerant for their whole program. But we are not without hope. At least I'm not. While I know we have a fight on our hands like never before, I also know that the majority in this country love women, girls, LGBTQ people, and justice. And if we act, if we step out, if we don't shut up and sit back and wait and instead pour into the streets with our fury and do not relent, we can restore legal nationwide abortion. In case you can't hear it in my voice, I was out in front of the Supreme Court when the decision was announced, spreading this message from Rise Up for the number abortionrights.org. And I want to share it with you now. The illegitimate overturning of abortion rights must not stand. Into the streets now to demand the federal government must restore nationwide legal abortion now. The overturning of abortion rights is illegitimate. It must not stand. The state has no right to force women to have children against their will, to treat women's wombs as sites of surveillance, to hunt down, put on trial, and imprison women who are accused of inducing their own abortions. Forced motherhood is female enslavement. To fall silent now is to acquiesce to a growing pile of the shattered lives of women and girls. It is to acquiesce to the growing theocratic assault on contraception, LGBTQ rights, on the history and lives of Black people, and much more. Do not listen to those who claim that this atrocity can be solved by waiting to vote in November's elections. No. The masses of people have never won or defended fundamental rights by relying on elections. Civil rights were won in the streets. The right to vote was won in the streets. The right to marriage equality and other LGBTQ rights were won by rising up in the streets. Roe v. Wade itself was the result of mass struggle in the streets. And across Latin America, women are decriminalizing abortion by waging fierce struggle in the streets. This is what is needed now. We must rise up now for abortion rights. We must fill the streets again and again in massive, sustained, and growing nonviolent protests. We must make clear to those in power that we will sooner bring the gears of society to a grinding halt through mass nonviolent resistance than to accept the horror of forced motherhood. Rise up for abortion rights, abortion on demand and without apology. In today's episode, we're sharing a conversation I had with Wajahat Ali on the January 6th hearings. But first, I want to share some of the voices that I heard outside the Supreme Court following the overturn of Roe, calling on you, yes, you, to act now.
Be clear, if we want to reverse this fascist, illegitimate decision, it is not going to come by
waiting on Congress. It is not going to come by voting in November. It is not going to come by pleading with these Democrats. It is going to come if we rise up and we dare to take history into our hands.
That's right. Yes.
Let's be real. There has never been a fundamental advance won for the masses of people through the election booth. Even the right to vote was not won by voting. It was won by people doing freedom rides. It was won by people standing up and going to jail. It was won by suffragettes going on hunger strikes while locked up incarcerated. If even the right to abortion was not won by waiting for the elections or waiting for the courts. Women rose up. Women fought back. How was marriage equality won? How was marriage equality won? How were LGBTQ rights won? By rising up, by filling the streets. If we want, and we must, restore legal abortion across this country, it is going to take struggle. It is going to take sacrifice. It is going to take putting it on the line. Not just waiting, not just one day. It is going to take people disrupting business as usual. We need to fill these streets.
That's right.
We need to fill these streets again and again and again. I want to tell you, sisters and brothers and beautiful people, if these streets were filled with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and millions of us, day after day, day after day, and everywhere around the world the cameras were showing, millions of us with the green bandana of abortion rights, standing up and demanding legal abortion nationwide, we could compel the White House, we could compel Congress to do what they will never do if we sit at home. We can compel them to act now to restore legal abortion across this country. They have the power to do it if we exercise our power to demand it.
That's
in these streets. And I am not talking about waiting for November. Let's be real. These Democrat strategists have been out here saying, well, if the court overturns Roe, maybe we can win the elections off people's fury. We don't want them riding the power on our fury and enslavement. We want them to restore legal abortion across this country.
We cannot let them get away with this. They overturned Roe versus Wade on us today. But we are going to be in these streets day and night, getting nonviolent civil disobedience and showing them, showing the people in the court, in the Senate, in the Congress, the Biden administration, showing the whole fucking world that we won't go back.
We are so pro-life that we have one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the country. And we are so pro-life that we have one of the highest infant mortality rates in the country. And to address this, the solution was not, in fact, to help mediate this. It was, in fact, to pass the first successful 6-week ban in the country on abortion. I'm from Texas. And their next step in ensuring that abortions did not occur was not, in fact, to address sex education. In fact, I didn't have a sex education. I had an abstinence-only sex education. They refused to teach consent, and they refused to teach about contraceptives. And guess what? We have above-average rates of sexual activity among the teenage community. We have one of the highest teenage birth rates in the country, and one of the highest recurring birth rates among teenage mothers. Teenage mothers who give birth more than once before they turn 20. When I was graduating high school, I'm 19 now, a year ago, Texas passed the 6-week abortion ban. And for the very first time in my life, I realized that I had a human right that had been taken away from me, that it was no longer my right to decide if I had a child or not. That was the government's decision. And it really didn't matter how that impacted my life. It didn't matter if I would afford college after being forced to have a child. It didn't matter if my dreams required traveling across the country or doing something that would make it very difficult to be a mom at the same time. It didn't matter what anything I wanted for my future mattered. And anything that I did leading up to that point, it didn't matter because it was now the government's decision to force me to have a child against my will. That was a year ago. And the courts let it stand, with the exception of a two-day break in between. And now, with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, my home state will actually criminalize abortion care. Doctors will be serving up to life sentences in prison for giving people abortions. And I'm fairly certain that if they're willing to make doctors spend life in prison for giving abortions, it's not going to be long till they extend that to pregnant people. I'm deeply afraid that pretty soon my only options if I get pregnant are going to be following what the government tells me to do and having a child against my will, or not following what the government tells me to do and spending my life in prison. What a fucking free America. Land of the free, land of the equal, it's fucking bullshit. And this year has shown me that over and over and over again. Texas is so pro-life that when the Black Lives Matter movement resurged and gained a lot of media attention, their solution was to remove large portions of history out of American history taught in Texas schools. Martin Luther King's speeches, out. Teaching that the KKK was bad, it's out. Because it makes white students uncomfortable. Let's also talk about the fact that maternal mortality rates for Black women are 3 times higher than for white women. I want to tell you guys about a story that somebody told me since I started my activism a year ago, and it's the story of somebody who had an abortion before Roe v. Wade. They told me that when they were on a family vacation in Mexico, they met up with a friend, and their friend raped them at gunpoint. They got pregnant, and when they wanted an abortion, there were none available in their area because it was illegal, and they didn't even know that was a thing at the time because no one was talking about it. And so she found the nearest abortion provider in her area, and she asked for an abortion. He gave it to her, but of course something went wrong, because when you make healthcare illegal and the only people offering it are just normal people, they're not qualified in providing the care. So she began to hemorrhage. He panicked, and he left her in a bathtub of her own fucking blood to die. She made it out. She made it to the hospital, and she lived, but thousands of people didn't. Another woman told me about her experience getting an abortion. She was 18, my age, a freshman in college. She couldn't find the care, so she traveled to Mexico. She also began to hemorrhage, and when she drove back to the States, when she went to the hospital, to the emergency room, the nurses looked at her and they said, "Honey, nobody here is going to be willing to help you." None of the doctors would be willing to touch her because they were afraid of the legal implications that came with saving the life of a woman who had had an illegal abortion. We need to talk about these stories. A lot of people don't want to talk about the hanger thing. They don't want to see that kind of imagery because they're afraid that people are going to think, oh, all self-managed abortions are unsafe. No, we don't think that. It's a testament to the past, and it's a testament to what happens if abortion is inaccessible. Because we have medication abortion now, that's great. But what happens when states are actually successful in banning the mailing of these abortion pills?
Exactly.
What happens when abortion funds run out of money, paying for people to travel across state lines, or paying for these abortion pills to get mailed to people? And I'm going to be real honest, guys. I work at an abortion fund. We're running out of money. All of us. Because when people have to travel across state lines, the costs raise exponentially. I actually work at RAP, the Women's Reproductive Rights Assistance Project. We're a national abortion fund. We allocate our funds to whichever states have the most need at certain points in time. And all of our donations, or all of the donations, go to the people who need them most. And I'm saying this all because I want to build a sense of urgency in you all. Because a lot of people are trying to downplay what's happening. Even people in the reproductive rights movement, even people in the abortion rights movement, they're trying to downplay the severity of what we're walking into.
Yes.
But I don't want you guys to feel calm.
No.
I want you guys to feel urgency. Do you know why? Because we have to keep coming back in the streets. Roe v. Wade decision days. And we're going to keep showing up. We're going to keep coming back because that's what it's going to take to get the right back. Nothing less. Because they're not going to listen to us unless we make them fucking listen to us. Yeah.
My name is Serenity Rush. I am an Afro-Latina 13-year-old girl. This country is going to be my country. This world is going to be my world. So how dare they make laws that don't affect them whatsoever. They won't be around long enough to live in the hell that they have now created. It is already normal for me to be catcalled down the street. I will not let it be fucking normal for me to have no control over my body either. Wars, hunger, climate change going on, but their priority is to take away my rights. The rights of my mother, of my daughter, and the rights of everyone after.
We don't have justice, okay? Our bodies are being fucking policed by some old-ass white men sitting in their fucking office chairs writing on their fucking papers, okay? And if you're sitting on your ass on your couch, get the fuck out here! Fucking okay? You can't fucking police our bodies, okay? You're gonna fucking stand up, because you can't just fucking...
That was, in order of speaking, Sansara Taylor, Jules, Paxton Smith, and youth activists. Join them, sign up, get involved, and support. Rise up for the number, abortionrights.org. Now, here's my interview with Wajahat.
Go. You all just missed an amazing conversation where we talked about married people sharing houses with strangers for the first time in 10 years and the things that you can only do with your spouse, which is go to the bathroom with the door open, not wear pants. But other than that, everything's going well.
So you were just saying, and then I will back up and I will introduce who I'm talking to, but we were talking about that you thought you might have scared your fellow panelists earlier today.
Yeah, so I was on Mary Trump's podcast, The Great Mary Trump, and she's invited a few of us to give commentary during and after these fantastic hearings that I hope people have seen, or at the very least, you've caught up on them later on the YouTubes or the news channels. And specifically, she asked me about my assessment about, well, what does it say about the Republican Party that even if they throw Donald Trump under the bus after these hearings, that many of them, even the people that we've heard from, such as Rusty Bowers and Brad Raffensperger, have said, oh yeah, even though Trump pressured us to do illegal acts in his illegal coup, and the MAGA base has literally threatened us and our family, we'll still vote for him again. And what I said, my conclusion was, is that the GOP and the entire right-wing ecosystem has become a radicalized and weaponized force that is against the majority and against democracy. They will try to implement white Christian nationalism and gain power for the minority by any means necessary. They will take back this country with violence if they must, and they will stand their ground because they believe the rest of us, including Republicans who don't go along with a big lie, are an active threat to them, their religion, their lifestyle, and now their children. Specifically, they believe we're part of an international cabal led by the Jews who are trying to both replace them and also kidnap and eat and kill their children. And I'm not making that up. That's part and parcel of QAnon. And as evidence of that, and I said a lot, is that 108 Republicans who've just won their primary since May all believe the big lie. Mm-hmm. Majority of Republican voters believe the big lie. The RNC, ladies and gentlemen, and not just Marjorie Taylor Greene, the RNC itself decided to censure Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger for appearing on this bipartisan committee. Liz Cheney used to be the number three Republican, ladies and gentlemen. But that same day where they censured Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, who voted with Trump 93% of the time, but said, you know what? A violent insurrection is a step too far. They said the violent insurrectionists, the RNC said this, the violent insurrectionists were, quote, ordinary citizens engaging in a, quote, legitimate political discourse. The RNC said this. And what we're witnessing right now is the Republican Party is purging itself of everyone who's not extreme enough. Mo Brooks, a freaking extremist who wore a Kevlar vest on the day of January 6th, and according to the hearings, apparently asked for a pardon. He's kicked out. Why? Because he eventually said, we should move on from the election. Dan Crenshaw is now called Eyepatch McCain and a traitor. He is freaking hard far right Texas Republican, accosted just last week by the Texas GOP because he says we got to move on. The Texas GOP itself is saying, hey guys, in 2023, we reserve the right to secede. to secede. And by the way, the Texas GOP, the Republicans of the second most populous state, have said that they affirm the big lie and Joe Biden is not the legitimate president. So even if the hearings win, what I see right now, Sam, is that the institutions barely held, and all it would have taken was a few more Republicans who were, say, in the Justice Department, who are already in the Supreme Court, who are already packing the state legislatures to go along with this ongoing coup, and boom, that's a wrap. That's it. All it takes is a few. And the next time they get power, which seems like likely in 2022 and 2024, they'll have the House, they'll have the Senate, they have the Supreme Court, they have the state legislatures, they're unleashing the precinct strategy, they'll have the Justice Department, and the coup will be a success. Who or what will stop them? And if I'm wrong here, tell me where I'm wrong. I'd love to be proven wrong. That's what I said.
So, yeah. Who is this on fire guy that we are talking to right now? Let's step back and get into that. And then I want to go back and get into what he just said. We've had 5 days worth of hearings. Day one, the first hearing, panel presented really powerful, horrifying story of the sprawling cast of characters that include Trump, the Proud Boys, and a Capitol Police officer. Day two, in its second hearing, committee showed how Trump ignored aides, advisors, and declaring victory prematurely, relentlessly pressing claims of fraud he was told repeatedly were wrong. And day three was the day that I had a lot of problems with, but was the day that we dug into how Trump pressured Pence to go along with a plan to overturn his loss, even after he was told it was illegal, according to testimony laid out in hearing number three. Day four, the committee used that time to expose and provide evidence regarding how Trump was personally involved in a scheme to put forward a whole slate of fake electors and highlight the pressure, the intimidation, the harassment that state officials faced to overturn the election. And today, day five, damning evidence on attempts to pressure the Department of Justice to overturn the election. While too many, in my opinion, decent people who care about the future, about humanity, are looking at January 6th as over and done, too many people don't see the deep implications for the future. And too many people are not following what's going down right now around these investigations into January 6th. The further information that's coming out, the possibility of criminal indictments, including of Trump himself, and just really the all-out intense polarization going on in this country around all that. I am so glad to talk to a guest who has not moved on, who has been following and analyzing these hearings in real time and is here already sharing his observations to help us process what we've heard so far, hearings that have already brought out new evidence as to the depth and multifaceted scope of the plot to overturn the elections. I'm so glad to bring back on Wajahat Ali to the Refuse Fascism podcast. He's the author of Go Back to Where You Came From and Other Helpful Recommendations on How to Become an American, senior fellow at the Western State Center. You've likely read his work. I hope you have. On The Daily Beast, where he's the columnist, listen to him on Democracy-ish, which he co-hosts, and seen him on MSNBC, like this afternoon, where he was featured as a commentator. And oh yeah, he's a recovering attorney and playwright. If you're listening to this pod, you probably already follow him on Twitter at Wajahat Ali. Welcome back. And thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me back. Thank you for doing your podcast. And thank you for that awesome introduction. If I wasn't married, I could have scored at least 2 dates off that. So thank you. My wife will not be impressed. She goes, meh.
Well, it's all true. We got into some of this already with what you laid out, but just to step back, not just from today. We've now had 5 days, as I said, of various themes being laid out related to the mob attack on the Capitol on January 6th and the larger coup plot that extended before that fateful day on January 6th. It's a few parts of this question. Can you tell us what to you were the biggest revelations, either in terms of evidence that we already knew was happening that was highlighted or actually completely new pieces of the story that have come out? What's your main takeaway?
My main takeaway is that Donald Trump not only was intimately involved in promoting this illegal coup attempt, but he orchestrated it as well, and that he was pressuring people in the Justice Department. He was pressuring the secretaries of state. People like John Eastman, the architect of this coup in search of a legal theory, was told by the respected conservative judge, Tara Judge Luttig, who also gave very damning testimony that it's all BS. He laid to waste any and every rationalization that Republicans have professed, even though they knew and they were told repeatedly by fellow Republicans that it was crap, they nonetheless persisted. And the fact is that a lot of these Republicans are people who are part and parcel of Trump's staff. Bill Stepien, right? So there was Team Normal and Team Crazy. You had Jervanka throw it under the bus. You had Bill Barr now saying it was complete BS. So it shows you how they cannot claim ignorance and that everyone, even internally within the Trump administration, knew it was bunk. But nonetheless, to protect Trump and the Republican Party, this information is only coming out now. I think for today's hearing, and specifically today is day five, where we listen to Jeffrey Rosen, who is the acting attorney general. We listened to his number two, Richard Donahue of the Justice Department. We listened to Stephen Engel. And then we also got some testimony from the depositions. This was a very damning day for Donald Trump, John Eastman, and also Jeffrey Clark, who, by the way, allow me to say eloquently, is completely effed, right? He was the rube and or the willing participant in the Justice Department, willing to carry Trump's water and promote this big lie conspiracy. He tried his best to become the acting attorney general. But then Richard Donahue said, if you make this unqualified fool acting attorney general, there will be mass resignations at the Justice Department, right? He's the guy who tried to send this bogus letter to Georgia on behalf of the Justice Department, claiming that there was fraud. So then Brad Raffensperger and other Republicans would have, like, you know, I don't know, the equity or the space to like go along with this coup plot. And then he had Richard Donahue, the number two again, the Justice Department, openly say that Donald Trump told him, just say it's corrupt and we'll do the rest. And so what you're seeing every day, Sam, is it's an orchestrated movement where Trump was at the center and tried to use every lever of his power and used Republicans, such as, according to what we found out, Andy Biggs of Arizona, who apparently tried to pressure Rusty Bowers, the Republican Arizona speaker, the aide of Senator Johnson from Wisconsin, who apparently had a fake slate of electors, right? And what we found out, this beautiful chef's kiss at the end, this great little teaser, was that there was a seditious six, as I call it, group of Republicans who proactively sought the pardons. That was the biggest takeaway for me from day one, that there were Republicans proactively seeking pardons. And the rest of us were like, who are these Republicans? And we came up with our educated guesses. And lo and behold, it seems that our guesses were right. It was Andy Biggs, Mo Brooks, Matt Gaetz, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Louie Gohmert, Jim Jordan Sniff for one. And there was probably one more that I'm missing. And so who asks for a proactive blanket pardon? Totally normal thing to do, right? Oh, by the way, I need a pardon. I haven't done anything wrong, but just in case. Final thing I'll say is this is deeper than we know. There are more people involved. The people who were involved knew it was bullshit the whole time, but nonetheless persisted. Trump is actively involved. I think it's very difficult for the Justice Department to say, we won't prosecute him. And with shit that we just know, you have to at least indict this guy. Maybe he'll escape sentencing or going to jail, but this dude has to be indicted. My takeaway, there's no way they don't indict him. The last thing I'll say, I promise, is right before this hearing, we learned that Jeffrey Clark, this rube and this instrument that Donald Trump used to corrupt the Justice Department, his house was raided, Sam, yesterday by the Department of Justice. So I feel like they got folks dead to rights. And the problem is that even though I think we will see prosecutions, even though the case is made that not only Donald Trump, but a majority of the right-wing ecosystem went along with this ongoing coup plot, ladies and gentlemen, it's ongoing, it still won't stop the Republicans from taking the House and the Senate. How does a democracy survive this GOP? Question I've been asking every week. How does our democracy survive this radicalized GOP? I don't have the answer. You asked me a simple question, pardon me, and I gave you a long TED Talk.
It was the perfect TED Talk, and we appreciate every word. But you highlighted several questions that I wanted to get into more. But let me get at the last part of what you said first, because I think that there's more to walk through on that. You posit that even if he's indicted, that doesn't stem the tide.
Nope.
If people watch the hearings, which they should, dramatically like uncover and have really set forth evidence that could and should be the basis to indict Trump himself on a number of serious crimes. And you have indicated other people that you think this could also possibly indict. And I think it's something like now 60% of the population now believes Trump should be charged with crimes.
It went up 8%.
The question on many people's minds is, will Merrick Garland, the attorney general, actually follow through the evidence if it points to Trump, which I think we can all say it has.
Yep.
And what will happen if he does? And if I'm characterizing this right, you're seeming to say, he's going to be indicted, but it might not have that much impact.
Yeah, no, you're right. So this is my take on this. The institutions are corrupted. And what we saw and what we've learned is that if it was not just for a handful of
people, not to interrupt.
Yeah.
But for people who are listening, people use that word institutions. Can you just clarify how people should understand that word?
Yeah. So I'm saying political institutions, right? Like I will say the Democratic Party is a political institution. The Republican Party, the GOP is an institution. The Supreme Court is an institution. State legislatures, I would say, is an institution, right? The Justice Department is an institution. These institutions barely held back an ongoing coup. If it wasn't just for a bunch of folks, lifelong conservatives who decide to put country above party, we would be in a constitutional crisis right now. That's it. And that's what terrifies me. Now, the second part to answer your question is, even if Trump is, say, indicted after the 2022 midterms, why am I still afraid? Is because they will get rid of Trump, but not Trumpism. Because my greatest fear of the past 5 years was that Trumpism would outlast Trump. And what we have seen, especially if you're Republican, oh, if I double down on conspiracy theories, racism, bigotry, anti-Semitism, nothing happens to me. My base loves it even more. So all you need is a polished, more intelligent, sophisticated, less self-destructive version of Trump to emerge. And voila, you have Ron DeSantis and Greg Abbott. And Florida and Texas in particular, I've written about this, you should look at them as laboratories for the national GOP experiment. This is what will happen on a national scale. They test it in Florida, they test it in Texas, they see if it passes muster, they see the response of Republicans, and voila, they will use and abuse power to go against their critics. In Florida, DeSantis has even slapped down Disney, and that was a warning shot across the bow for any corporation that doesn't toe the line. This is what I'm going to do to you, right? We're going to go after our own city councils. We're going to go after schools. We're going to go after private corporations. Don't say gay. And so what's going to happen is the Republican Party can get rid of Trump. They're like, ah, this Trojan horse, we don't need him anymore. Thank God we're done with him. Here comes DeSantis. The only hope that we have, and there's a lot of ifs here, knowing Trump and his megalomania, because he still has considerable sway over the right-wing ecosystem. If he unleashes his cannons on DeSantis, and if we see a cannibalism alongside a prosecution and more damning evidence, and maybe if Democrats get their head out of their ass and message effectively, and maybe if Roe gets overturned, which it will, that could be enough, Sam, to mobilize the majority just enough to let us barely retain the House and the Senate and stave off what I believe is fascism. But there's a lot of ifs there. Historically, we know that when there is a Democrat or Republican taking the presidency, what happens? The House flips. In addition, Joe Biden, I feel bad for him. He inherited a pandemic, inflation, disinformation, high gas prices. He's effed. So looking at it right now, they're losing the House. Maybe they'll retain the Senate. Or if they lose the Senate and they lose the House, you got a lame duck presidency. And then you have Democrats and the Democratic establishment that, in my opinion, and you might disagree with me, is not built for this fight or made for this moment. They're just not. They bring a pencil to a gunfight. Mitch McConnell brings a bazooka. Case in point, that they just did 6 hearings. I believe they should do hearings all summer. Like it works. The ratings are there. Like it works with the majority. You make a compelling case, but they're like, oh, no, let's talk about, you know, infrastructure and let's talk about inflation. Everyone gives a shit, but it doesn't move the needle, right? And so they're afraid of fighting the culture war. They're afraid of courting their base. They're afraid of fighting fire with fire. And an example is, where is the investigation into Ginni Thomas and Clarence Thomas? What a beautiful moment right now. A Gallup poll just came out that said that we have the lowest approval rating in the Supreme Court. Supreme Court is going to overturn Roe v. Wade. Beautiful example to get the majority to show how the Supreme Court is corrupted by the right-wing majority. Talk about Clarence Thomas and Ginni Thomas, rally the majority once probably this month is going to overturn Roe v. Wade, and they're just slow walking. So that's my fear. Thank you for coming into my second TED Talk.
We're going to keep coming back. We'll be your loyal audience here. There's a lot that I totally agree with what you're laying out, in particular around the danger posed. I think that a big part of it is that, and this we have unity on, the Republican Party is completely gutted as a political party. It is, at this point, completely fascist. Anybody who wants to argue that there's still a few
Rational Republicans,
they're no longer seen as part of that party, whether they think they are or not. It doesn't matter. That doesn't change the fact that for Kinzinger and Cheney, this was a kiss of death.
Yeah, literally, he was retiring. He said he has to retire. Have no chance left.
So this is a fascist party they no longer believe in or feel bound by what have been the so-called norms of rule in this country. And whatever you think of those norms, you know, whether you think that we never had a democracy or any of that, they feel no longer bound by them. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you've got the Democratic Party that has no real answer to this, partially because they refuse to accept the danger that is posed by that.
There you go.
They continue to cling to maintaining the normal way. They are more concerned about order than they are about justice. They are more concerned about preserving a status quo of democratic rule that no longer exists
And wasn't that great in the, back in the day? You know, these institutions weren't, you know, they look at them with these romantic halcyon eyes, but I'm like, yo, these institutions themselves were pretty corrupt and didn't do a lot for poor folks and Black and brown folks.
Yeah, and they're clinging to that even while the fascists are determined to tear out those norms and rule through what I would call openly and aggressive oppressive means without any veneer of what used to be democracy for all.
I mean, for those of you who are listening, if you have a couple of minutes and as you're listening to this, just go look at the Texas GOP platform that dropped a few days ago. Just look at that platform.
It's horrific.
If you think that Sam's exaggerating in her analysis, this is the platform that they decided, you know what? We want the world to see this platform. We want the world to know that we're going to demonize LGBTQ families and lifestyles and call it unnatural during Pride Month. And we want people to know that we reserve the right to secession. And we want the world to know that we believe in the big lie and that we don't see Joe Biden as a legitimate president. The Texas GOP, ladies and gentlemen. So tell me, where are the rational Republicans? Mitt Romney, whose seat is safe because he's in Utah, but good luck Mitt Romney going anywhere else, right? Liz Cheney, let's see if she survives her primary. We won't know. 108 Republicans who all believe in the big lie, who all won their primary. You got Doug Mastriano, who might be the next governor of Pennsylvania, an open Christian nationalist, who was at the January 6th insurrection and did his part as a state senator to help Donald Trump as part of his illegal coup, openly promoting all of this, by the way, without any shame. And then you got Herschel Walker, who doesn't know that we have 50 states because he believes we have 52 states, but he's too busy acknowledging new children every day. You know, as this perhaps next senator of Georgia, I mean, the inmates have run over the institution. When Joe Biden said it's ultra MAGA, I want to correct him. No, the GOP is MAGA. The MAGA is GOP. The next word I want Democrats to use, and I hope this hearings give them the ammunition and the chutzpah and the cojones to say it, call them an extremist party. Call them traitors, but they're still not there yet, Sam. And I don't think they'll get there. Republicans are calling them and other Republicans pedophiles, and we are calling them rational. Amazing.
I wanted to get into that a little bit more because Barbara McQuaid, former federal prosecutor, MSNBC legal analyst, she said in regard to filing the criminal charges against Trump in connection with efforts to subvert the election, said that, quote, will very likely spark civil unrest and maybe even civil war, end quote. And then she added, quote, I think not charging is even worse because not charging means you fail to hold someone criminally accountable who tried to subvert our democracy, end quote. So I wanted your thoughts on that. And I also wanted, why may the Democrats choose to actually refuse to prosecute, even if the evidence is there?
Precisely for the reason that you said is that they're afraid, first and foremost, that when the Republicans most likely get power, that they will then unleash these cannons against them. And news alert, Democrats, they already will. Ted Cruz has already said that the House, when the GOP takes over, is going to impeach Biden. Why? Who knows? They're literally already telling you they're going to impeach Biden. I give you the Benghazi hearings. I give you Emailgate. I give you the slandering of Seth Rich. I give you Hunter Biden. They are already going to use and abuse their power to do bullshit hearings, to create a narrative that the Democrats are corrupt. They're going to use and abuse their power to unleash the mob they have created, to potentially unleash violence upon Democrats. And if you think I'm exaggerating, Marjorie Taylor Greene was stripped of her committee hearings by Democrats because she online, you know, suggested or actually applauded violence against fellow Democrats. Let's not forget that Paul Gosar, another white supremacist, shared that anime that showed violence against AOC. What do you think is going to happen? They're aligned with the Oath Keepers. They're aligned with the Proud Boys, men who are dedicated to using violence in furtherance of their ideology, who, by the way, their leaders were charged with seditious conspiracy on January 6th. So Democrats, you bending the knee and you trying to be Charlie Brown to Lucy is not going to stop Lucy from lifting the football. So number one, fear. Number two, the perception that the institutions are partisan. Who gives a shit? You're dealing with a Republican Party that calls you a pedophile and literally a majority of them believe the big lie. Flex your muscle. Bring a baseball bat to a baseball game. Don't bring like a friggin' piece of paper and say, Section 6 says that you have to follow the rules. Republicans don't care. And then finally, you know, they have to realize, and I don't know if they have realized it yet, that the institutions will not hold. That just because they're buddy buddies with these people, just because someone called them up when they got married, just because they go to the same golf clubs, because they go to the same churches and synagogues, because they know deep down when they're drinking rum, they're different people. Fascists don't care. They will throw them under the bus because the base has become radicalized and the right-wing base needs red meat every day. It needs more and more and more. And so I think that the Democrats have to use the 5 months that they have with the power that they have to flex their muscle in every single capacity to get to the truth, to go after these hearings, and to do their best to hopefully convince the majority. And then the hope is that the majority and the Justice Department allegedly is not influenced by anyone, but we're human beings, Sam. If the Justice Department sees that there is a growing tide that demands an investigation, they will feel like, oh, okay, you know, we won't be accused of being partisan. Let's do it and let's prosecute and let's see what happens with these indictments and prosecutions, assuming if they come. But the public at this point needs to see that type of accountability, because just based on what you and I know from what we have seen, we're on the Select Committee, we're on the Justice Department, this dude should get prosecuted. Like, how is this guy not indicted yet? That's my question. Like, if it was anybody else, Sam, like, they would be in jail. Just based off the phone call to Brad Raffensperger, the Georgia Secretary of State alone. That phone call alone should create an indictment.
I think that last question and point is 100% on it. We should have seen it already. That's not to discount the mountain of evidence being provided through these hearings, but there is a basic reality of how the fuck is he not already a boss, right?
He's like a poor white dude, a black dude, a brown dude, like anybody else, you, anybody me, else, be over.
Anybody else. And the longer that this goes on, the more it gets normalized and the more vicious and vengeful they become. You talked about the Charlie Brown, Lucy and the football. And I think that what the Democratic Party does, and then there's also what we the people do. And I think that we're playing that role too with our passivity and consistently looking up and hoping that those Dems change their ways.
They won't.
Instead of seeing our role in that. And there's the politics of the possible that we're continually told to follow, that these are the rules you have to play by. These are the people that are going to fix it. And what we've seen is that they're not. They can't fight it the way that it needs to be. And we have a role to play.
You made a good point, Sam. And I'll give you an example about that. Look, Democrats are so terrified of their own shadow because probably their shadow is black. That's the base of the Democratic Party, right? But I'll give you an example. Oh, no, you can't say expand the courts. You can't say expand the courts. It's not popular. Well, if you investigate Ginni Thomas and Clarence Thomas and you reveal the depths of their corruption and depravity and you go off the polls that shows that the Supreme Court is extremely unpopular and now is populated by a right-wing extremist majority that is advancing their counter-majoritarian ideology by any means necessary. And once they overturn Roe v. Wade, voila, you build up the case where your base then can say expand the courts and more people say yes, right? You just need Democrats to be bold. Raising the living wage was also unpopular until it became popular. Marriage equality was unpopular until it became popular. And so you need the masses. This is where people say, I get so depressed. Yes, but you know, Obama said something to a friend of mine, which I'll share. It was a White House meeting. And, you know, my friend came and asked him about a foreign policy issue. And Obama leaned in and says, you have to make me do the right thing. So Obama knew what the right thing was, but he says, you have to make me do the right thing. Politicians, at the end of the day, they want money and votes. The people have a role to play. If the people rise up and say, you better do this or else we're going to primary your ass, that's going to happen. Democrats aren't, unfortunately, as afraid of their base as Republicans are afraid of their base. Republicans are terrified of their base because probably they realize that their life might be threatened, but they realize that there's a right-wing ecosystem that creates the news for them. So you need Democratic leadership to promote the right policies, to connect the dots for people, to repeat it endlessly, to have it come out in the mainstream. And then, just like you mentioned, the five hearings, what happened? Actually, four hearings, what happened? 8% within 2 weeks, boom. It went from 52 to 60% where people are like, oh shit, this guy should be held accountable. So if you're not even willing to create the message, if you don't believe in the message, if you're not willing to say the message, and if you are adopting Republican talking points, how can we save democracy and how can you mobilize your base?
I appreciate that perspective. I know that you've been going at it all day, so I only have two more questions left.
And I promise I won't filibuster.
So one was, I just wanted to read something and be like, help me understand, is this correct?
Let's do it.
Okay. So Ellie Mistel, who I respect and many people do and should, put something out that I just wanted to get your opinion on. He tweeted earlier today that people need to understand that one of the only things keeping conservatives, I don't like that word, but he used it, in line 20 years ago was the concern of political revolt if their decisions were too extreme. Now they don't fear that at all. They think the opposition is too weak. They're going to keep doing this. Arguably, the conservative justices are more concerned over their personal safety, random act of violence directed at them by a crazy person, than they are of a concerted political pushback by a dedicated opposition. They don't think the quote unquote will of the people can stop them. I was wondering, what are your thoughts on that? And how should we change?
No, I absolutely agree. You've seen an emboldened Alito Thomas court, you know, with these decisions as today's recording, where apparently you don't need Miranda rights anymore. Awesome. So police can do whatever they want. And apparently they went after blue states who decided, such as New York, that, hey, you know, maybe we'll limit concealed carry. They're like, nope, Constitution says you can't do that. So they're flexing to the hilt because they're like, who's going to stop us? We're running out of time. We're under attack from Antifa and the deep state. We have to save our country. We have to save our children from becoming atheist transgender activists. We're going to do exactly what we want to do? We have the majority. What are you going to do? F you. It's like the woman who's running for Arizona governor tweeted yesterday. She said that if you elect me governor, I'm not going to even implement these unconstitutional gun laws. And then she just straight up threatened. What's the Fed going to do? Come and arrest me? I'd like to see you try. I call your bluff. Boom. There you go. A beautiful snapshot of the mindset that we're going to do what we have to do to save our country. You're too weak to stop us. Even if you think you're going to stop us, we're going to call your bluff. We know you're not man enough to do it. You're going to bring a pencil to a knife fight. We're going to bring a mother effing AR-15. We got the courts. We got the state legislatures. We got the House, probably in 2023. We got the Senate. We got the presidency. And this is how you also mobilize a vigilante mob. This is how you get Kyle Rittenhouse's. This country belongs to me. I'm going to stand my ground. I'm going to take a gun. I'm going to shoot whoever I want. What are you going to do about it? Nothing. Look what they did to Kyle Rittenhouse. Nothing. Look what they did to Eddie Gallagher, the Navy SEAL war criminal. Pardon him. Look what they did to Mark McCloskey, who took out a gun against peaceful BLM protester. Pardon him, and now he's running for Senate. It's my country now. It goes back to the 40s and 50s, right, in the South. All part of the KKK. We're going to implement frontier justice. And what are you going to do to stop us? And they're right. What are we going to do to stop them? So far, it seems nothing. And so if people are overwhelmed, exhausted, trying to survive, becoming climate change refugees, gas prices are going up, they'll feel drained and they'll feel tapped out. That's what they expect us to do. They expect us to first and foremost be intimidated by a minority, to cede the ground. It's working in school boards, where then they step in and take over. And they're expecting us to be too exhausted and too confused with disinformation. However, I'll say this. My friend said after George Floyd's murder, same thing like I just said right now. People don't care. People are overwhelmed. People are exhausted. And I said, sometimes all it takes is one spark. It takes one moment to galvanize the majority. And 23 million people came out. I still believe that when enough women realize that Roe v. Wade is gone and the Supreme Court keeps on it being extreme as it is, and perhaps even overturns Griswold and Eisenstein. For those of you who don't know, that's the right to privacy, the right to birth control. They've said they want to go after it. Loving v. Virginia, the allowed interracial marriage. My thing is, and some Republicans realize this, we're going too extreme too fast. And some Republicans are like, whoa, 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 let's slow the roll of our fascist plot. But at the end of the day, it'll be up to the people. The people in the streets, the people within these institutions fighting back, the people within these corporations saying enough is enough. Because without the people, I do not have faith in the institutions anymore. And I do not have faith in the Democratic Party that unfortunately is too weak and has the wrong type of leadership for this type of fight.
And I think that is a great place to stop.
I talk too much today. I have it on my mind.
There should be a lot on all of our minds. If we're looking with clear eyes at what humanity faces, at what the future looks like, if we don't intervene with everything that we've got, it's grim. And so we should all have a lot on our mind.
But look, we have to fight.
We have to fight. Part of fighting is processing this together. And so I appreciate you sharing your time and expertise with us. And if there was anything that you were like, oh, you need to know or you need to be thinking about, I want to debunk this. I just wanted to give you an open. If there was anything that we didn't touch on that you're like, well, if you want to refuse fascism, you need to know this or anything.
What I will say is this, is apathy and cynicism, although comforting, is cheap and lazy. And I believe we're in for a rough 10 years ahead where there's just going to be spasms of violence and constitutional crisis because I don't see the Republican Party de-radicalizing at any time soon. However, the one positive that we have, and it's a big positive, is we have the numbers. We have a majority, but the majority is flabby. If you organize the majority and the majority flexes, we fight back. The way people can fight back sometimes, and I get this all the time, watch, I'm nobody. Who am I? You're on CNN. You can get on MSNBC, you write for the New York Times and Daily Beast. I'm like, I love nobodies. Some of my favorite people are nobody. I'm a nobody. Think local. You can run for school board. You can run for city council. You can intervene in public schools right now, right? You can reach out to different communities and make alliances. Think about whatever superpower that you have. Even if, say, you're a stay-at-home mom or dad, you can have a profound impact on your children in your language, your behavior, what you teach them, their civic duty. And I don't want you to give up hope, and I don't want you to underestimate the power of the local footprint, because to flip it, Republicans are investing in the local strategy and it is working out for them. They have a minority. They don't have the majority, but it is organized. It is zealous. It wakes up every day with a feverish passion. If we match it, we win.
We can't let them have the future. And I think that, unfortunately, but I think what we're going to see tomorrow, and if not tomorrow, early next week, is the overturning of Roe and the world of hurt that that will bring. And I think that you were talking about this too, is that getting people to really take that moment, to seize that moment, to show how illegitimate a court this is. It is completely illegitimate. And people have to call that out and refuse to accept it. And everybody, nobody is too small or too little for that.
Nope.
So I really appreciate you coming on, sharing your time with us. Go eat something, give your voice a rest.
Thank you for accommodating my crazy schedule today. I did not expect to be sitting in front of a Zoom camera for 5 hours, but
Legos.
I'll finish the Lego set tonight. My wife, who tolerates my Legos, the one that I'm working on right now is a typewriter. And she says, out of all of them, this one is my favorite. I have a wifey win. It's a typewriter that actually works like a typewriter. If those of you are into Lego or not, get the Lego typewriter.
Does it slide?
Yeah, it go click, 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 click. It slides and you could slide it back.
Oh, that's great.
I know. My wife's like, this one is my favorite. I got some wifey points. It's always a win.
That's good.
Wisdom before we depart. Marry a spouse or partner up with someone who tolerates you for your juvenile tendencies. And that is my old Uncle Waj wisdom for today.
Before we close, I wanted to share something from my perspective. The Democratic Party is not simply being incompetent or out of touch, but they are representing a section of the ruling class that is hell-bent on maintaining the status quo of American empire with a smiling face, the semblance of civil rights, and the right to dissent that imperialist parasitism can buy, and the veneer of pluralistic democracy, even as they violently subjugate the world. While they may have hoped or even fooled themselves into believing Roe would hold, now they seek to reconcile with and appease the fascists to restore order. But their calculus could change if people were to rise up in fury to restore and secure their right to abortion. If we rose up in a way that truly challenged that order. When we speak about the potential for the Democrats to be compelled to restore abortion rights, we must not fall into any illusions. As Bob Avakian, revolutionary leader, put it, quote, if you try to make the Democrats be what they are not and never will be, you will end up being more like what the Democrats actually are, end quote. But we can and must try with everything we have to transform the people and unleash the power of the people still pent up under more and more pressure every day in order to win that restoration. Our power is in the streets, nationwide, now. Biden's only answer to this atrocity is to vote in November. In case folks forgot, it's June. People's lives are on the line right now. Biden won't even say the word abortion. We gotta stop relying on the Democrats and look in the mirror. Look at that beautiful face. They won't act unless they're compelled to by mass resistance of the people in the streets. Speaking out, struggling all over society, refusing to compromise and play by the rules and defying the law at great risk, that is what won us Roe. Channeling the anger, the righteous fury into electoral politics, settling for the compromise, being mealy-mouthed and defensive, and even attacking those of us who were fighting and sounding the alarm. That is what got us to this horrible loss today. The fascists, with their constant demonstrations, their quote-unquote moral arguments, which were nothing but dark ages misogyny and ignorance, their unconscionable and violent hounding and worse of women and doctors and clinic personnel, are not and have not been playing the same game. And guess what? They won. And now they're changing the rules of the voting game. Even if you persist in playing it and believing in it, the referees are on their side. Wake up. Take to the streets. Nonviolent but direct, mass, meaningful action to let society know. There will be no business as usual if women are not free. Again, forced motherhood is female enslavement, abortion on demand, and without apology. I really hope that you'll join me in rising up for abortion rights. Again, visit riseupfortheabortionrights.org to get involved. Thanks for listening to Refuse Fascism. I want to hear from you, share your thoughts, questions, ideas for topics or guests, or lend a skill. Tweet me at Sam B. Goldman. Or you can drop me a line at SamanthaGoldman@refusefascism.org or leave a voicemail by visiting anchor.fm/refuse-fascism and clicking the message button. Want to support the show? Awesome! It's simple. Show us some love by rating and reviewing on Apple Podcasts or your listening platform of choice. And of course, follow, subscribe so you never miss an episode. Chip in to support our pod and content creation. Tell people understand and act to stop the fascist threat. You can donate by visiting refusefascism.org and hitting that donate button. Thanks to Mark Tinkelman, Richie Marini, and Lena Thorne for helping produce this episode. Thanks to incredible volunteers. We have transcripts available for each show, so be sure to visit refusefascism.org and sign up to get them in your inbox each week. We'll be back next Sunday. Until then, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America.